This is Neon Coltrane with Elise Osborne. This episode I'm going to preface with a trigger warning. So there's trigger warning about sexual traumas and gore, violence, murder, blood, terror of all kinds. So I also would like to know about this particular recording. It starts off all in fun, you know, it's a fun time. We're joking around about scary stories, and then it progressively gets really intense and very personal for me. And something that happens at the end of the story or episode or whatever, you know, is I end up confessing, like relaying, telling a personal story about my own life, and I can feel my breath getting heavy. I feel scared. I feel like nervous. I feel stressed out in releasing this, these words, this content, because I feel afraid of alienating myself or others. I'm afraid of someone hearing it and feeling triggered for their own trauma, or someone who cannot relate and feeling freaked the fuck out by me and my own experiences. So as far as I've lived, as someone who's had terrors, I think that it's been very scary to me to share the depth of the severity of my experiences, because I don't want other people to feel fucked up over it. So, trigger warning. I had intended to keep it very light, and as far as my own personal experience barometer, like the things that I'm telling, start to dip into the trauma zone. But maybe someday I'll experience a more extensive retelling of deeper traumas, because I think that that has value for the spirit. But the intention always is not only to entertain, but also to share and to shed and to engage with you as a listener in a way that might be a medicine to your soul. So if hearing my story of my own sexual traumas helps you, good. And if not, I would turn away now, because I try not to go there, but I end up kind of going there a little bit. And if that is something that you're not prepared for, I would say do not listen to this episode. Also, there's stories of murder and gore as we're giggling our way through the storytelling device of creepypasta. If you've decided that you are permitted to go forward and you will not be, or you're allowing yourself to be triggered if you feel that you might, or you don't feel that you're going to be triggered, please enjoy. Welcome to Neon Cauldron. This is Elise Osborne here with William Schultz.
Hi. Is that what I do?
We're just speaking English greetings. Hello. So this is a special show where I'm drinking wine out of a jar and William is drinking Diet Coke from a McDonald's tumbler. And we are going to dissect creepypasta. So I was trying to tell William what a creepypasta was, and he said,
I asked if it was like an exquisite corpse, not literally like an exquisite corpse, but a thing that, like the name of a thing.
A name of a story styling. Yeah. So yes, creepypasta is a term for basically like urban legends. Most of them are told through the internet, and similar to a meme where it's the same image over and over, and you can change it slightly. I think a creepypasta is sort of a story like an urban legend where you don't really know its origin or if it's true. And it could be sort of true, but it sounds really insane. And my favorite thing about a creepypasta, as William was just noticing, is that they're very boring. They're boring to listen to.
Seems pretty boring so far.
So, I think that we should create like a story cooking show where we create our own creepy pastas, and I'm gonna go first.
Wait a second. Oh, we're gonna make a thing right now?
Yeah, I just decided to.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'm ready for you to start.
Okay. So this is me making up a creepy pasta. It's usually a man who has a very normal, slightly Canadian sounding voice, and he says something like, "Okay, I need to not laugh when I do this." It was the summer after college, and sorry, it was the summer after college, and I finally got my own place, so I moved in. After unpacking several boxes, I got tired, so I took a little break and decided to check out the new neighborhood. As I walked through the new neighborhood, I noticed that there was a small cafe at the end of my street, so I popped in. And when I walked in, a very strange man gave me a greeting. "Hello, sir. How are you today?" And I said, "Oh, I'm fine. Do you have any sandwiches?" And he pointed cryptically to an old menu. The menu was clearly hand-drawn in chalk. And I noticed one item on the menu that caught my attention. So I asked the man, "What's number 42?" "Oh, sir, you shouldn't have 42. You're not ready." And I decided, what the heck? Maybe I should try new things. I am in a new neighborhood after all. So begrudgingly, he sold me the number 42, which I brought back to my apartment. And as I was eating it, I noticed the flavor was a little bit different. I couldn't tell what kind of sandwich meat it was. At the bottom of my sandwich, I noticed a fingernail. And then I realized that I had been eating human flesh. The next day, I went back to the restaurant looking for maybe an explanation or maybe I would have to call the police. And it turns out it was just an abandoned building. There was absolutely nothing left there. I still have nightmares. So that's.
That was actually kind of scary.
What? That was scary.
Like, I was really picturing everything, and I was picturing that building, and then I got creeped out when it was gone.
Yeah, but it's like, are you afraid of dark?
Yeah,
Are
exactly.
you afraid of dark? It's like one of those
I
kids
bet
shows for adults.
it's scary, like, as an 11-year-old at a campfire, like that. Yeah.
No, totally. And I've noticed that the author or the narrator always has this way of speaking where they're like, like it's very. You know what I'm saying? It's a little like dry and like confused nerd constantly. Like life, they show up to life and they're like, "Life? Okay."
Yeah, like
Yeah.
Millhouse.
Yeah. You don't think you can make one? You can. I mean, we're winging it. That's
I
not a
don't
classic
know. Oh my
pasta.
God.
We're just in the kitchen, home kitchen cooking creepy pasta.
And it has to be about cooking?
No, I'm just using it as a turn of phrase because it's called creepy pasta. You know, we're gonna make our own dishes.
Oh, okay. I really have nothing. My mind is completely blank.
Start there.
Oh God.
I think we need to start with the voice.
Let's see. Oh, no, I couldn't do that voice. It's too complex. Fuck. Okay. You're gonna have to edit like a big chunk because I'm just gonna like
Oh,
think
this is
eternally.
beautiful. Let's do it.
Okay. I really have
Wait,
no
here, I have a
idea.
challenge for you. Do you remember any urban legends? Or things you heard in your hometown?
Yeah,
Because.
actually, well, there's some true things that I can think of.
Let's hear them.
Oh, like, do you want me to tell like a true story? Okay, well, this is kind of sad. I'll tell it.
Great.
Okay, so one winter night, it was a bad blizzard, and am I doing this right? Okay. There was a bad blizzard, and this couple had been arguing in their house, and they...
In what town?
Menno, South Dakota. It's actually not in a town. They lived in the middle of nowhere, like in the country.
Wow.
And this couple was fighting, and they had like a 6-year-old and a little baby, maybe like a 18-month-year-old or something. And 18-month-old. And so the next morning, you know, it's all flocked with snow, and the 5-year-old emails his grandma. I don't know why email, but that's literally what happened. He emailed his grandma saying that his parents were dead.
What?
And the grandma's like, quit saying stuff like that. That's not true. And then, like, a few hours later, he's emailing his grandma, telling her to come. Wait, a 5-year-old wouldn't be able to email. I don't
know. Have you seen the 5-year-olds today? They, like,
but oh, they can't. God. They can't write at that age. They can't write shit.
I would not discriminate.
Maybe it was, like, maybe it's, like, video email. Maybe it's, like, FaceTime. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
This is like whatever. Anyway, so somehow, other than the phone, this 5-year-old is communicating with their grandmother. And I think it's like 2 days later, the grandma finally comes to the house because she can't reach her daughter. And the 5-year-old keeps saying, like, my parents are dead. My parents are dead. And she's like, quit making up lies. That's not true. So she finally drives out there when the roads are cleared, and she finds like bloody corpses in the hall, or the guy was in the garage. He shot himself, and the mom was in the hallway, with like a bullet wound to her head. And apparently they got in a fight. He shot her and then shot himself. And the 5-year-old was keeping his little brother alive by giving him Cheerios in his crib because it was like 2 days.
Oh my God.
And then, ambulance came, and then they like pulled the kids out of the window instead of taking them through the hallway to the door where their mom was. So that they wouldn't see it, I'm sure the 5-year-old saw it already, but not the baby. Okay. So anyway, I don't know. I mean, well, who knows? Yeah, I think an 18-month-old would like recognize their mother, but maybe not that they're dead. I don't know. Anyway, I guess that's like,
where did you hear that from, your mom or something?
No, like, I grew up in a tiny town, so it's like...
I'm sure there's more spooky stories in your tiny town.
Oh, there are. I've got a million.
Well, you grew up on a farm, so... Mm-hmm. What... You told me some fucked up stories about a cow splitting in half.
Oh, yeah. It's not a very long story, though.
It's what we got.
Yeah. Okay, so... this cow was drinking from a water tank in the middle of wintertime, and all the water had like overflown and spilled around the water tank, and it was slippery, and I guess the cow just like did the splits, and cows don't like bend that way, so it like ripped its skin in half, and it like just bled out. Like, it was a gross scene. It was just like blood like frozen in with like the water. Oh, and it's like and it looked like a cartoon almost, because the legs were just like spread eagle going, you know, in all four directions.
That traumatized the fuck out of you, or what?
I didn't see it I think if I had seen it happen in the moment, it would have been really disturbing, but I just saw like the aftermath. Like I just happened upon
still,
it.
Like, I mean, you don't think that that's like,
yeah, no, I mean, it was like, it made me sad and yeah. It was gross, but, I think it was less traumatizing because I didn't see the actual event occur.
It's always kind of, in some ways, like, more sad to hear about some innocent little animal getting fucked up sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I guess animals are innocent, but they live in a brutal world.
Right.
But I don't like people getting hurt either. I mean, disclaimer, I'm not enjoying these stories. But they have to be told. Okay, so what stories about your small town? I'm sure there's, like, so many weird things that have happened.
Oh, just, I mean, there's, I think there's been a few murders in my town, but people don't, you know, they've been labeled as suicides or just something to make it easier with, like, no investigation done, no, like, police work or making people uncomfortable, because people would rather just, have it be over with as easy as can be done and moving on. Like, for example, this woman who, this happened last, the summer, was it this last summer? I think it was last summer. Actually, it was a woman that I used to work with in the grocery store when I was in high school, who was found burned to death in her car. And like in the middle of a field. And they said she killed herself. And I was like, wait, why would someone like drive into the middle of a field? And I'm talking like a cornfield, like 8 foot high corn stalks. So this like woman, they think, just randomly drove her car aimlessly through a cornfield, you know, and then started her car on fire with herself in it. Oh, and her dog. Her dog was in the car, too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so they think she, like, just randomly drove through the cornfield and killed herself. But what I think happened was she was, like, friends with these meth heads. And I think they had some kind of argument, or she saw something, some kind of illegal activity that they were doing. And I think they chased her, and she was driving to try to get away, because she also drove through like a grove of trees, which why the hell would you do that? And then drove through a cornfield. And then I think she was running from something. And then I think she got stuck because, you know, you can only drive a car so far through a cornfield. And then, I think she was killed somehow, and then they just burned her in her car.
That's so fucked up.
And that happened last summer.
Oh my God.
Her name was Gail.
And you knew her from back in the day.
Yeah. When she was, she worked at the grocery store with me when I worked there in high school.
That's so fucking demented. Yeah. And then you're saying that it wasn't investigated. It was shut down.
Well, not shut down. They just called it a suicide, which to me didn't make any sense. Didn't sound or look like a suicide.
Do you think that that's why you're so interested in like forensic files and stuff like that?
Oh, I think I'm just interested in that because it's like weird and like dumb and interesting. And I love that. Like I love, like I'm a 70-year-old woman at heart who just loves being like terrified by like what could happen. You know, I guess like people enjoy being like frightened.
Well, I mean, I think there's something to be said about like that 70-year-old woman, because she's lived around for a while, has probably seen a lot of fucked up things. And I think that those things are relatable because most people have like these dark corners of their reality. Mm-hmm. And like somebody they know was murdered or like hurt in these fucked up ways. It's all around us, you know?
Right. Or just knowing that it could happen. And just, you know, you're having the, you know, your biggest fear is that it could happen to a family member or someone you really care about.
Yeah, that's really scary.
Okay, back to creepypastas. All right, I'm gonna tell another story. I'm deciding if I should tell a true story or.
Tell a true one.
All right, in the wave of creepypastas, I don't know how dark I should get. You said some really demented things, so should I get dark?
Yes, do it.
Oh, I don't know. Okay. My phone's about to die, so I don't know. I think that that's to me an indicator that I shouldn't tell the darkest stories I know. I'll try to keep it light enough. I won't go into the total pitch of my soul. Well, I will tell you in this vein of events. When I was a kid, I would watch tons of unsolved mysteries. I was like obsessed, right? And when I was walking home from school, I used to always think it was a normal Tuesday afternoon. little did she know, walking home from school would be the last afternoon of her life. Or, you know, like they always introduce things in this weird, mundane way, and then they say, little did they know, that was the last bite of pizza they would ever have, or whatever, you know?
Her last pizza roll.
That was her last Totino's So this is one night or one night. Psh, it wasn't nighttime. I had gotten off of school. I was in first grade. I lived in Visalia, California, with my father and stepmother. And for some totally insane reason, I would count the bus stops, like just as like a exercise on the way home every day. I would count the bus stops, and then I like got comfortable with like when my stop was, right? And then one day, as like a personal challenge, when I was in the first grade, I closed my eyes the whole ride. And I decided I'm going to count every time the bus stops, and I'm going to get off when it's my number. So I'm getting off the bus alone, and the bus driver says to my dumbass first grade little person, "Are you sure this is your stop?" Like for some reason, in my childish magical thinking, I was like, she's testing me. So it's like I looked at her like over the shoulder, like one strap on the backpack, like in like Mrs. Doubtfire kid fashion, and I was like, yeah, this is my stop. Like I said real confidently. I get off the bus and I look around. It looked kind of unfamiliar. In this town, everything looked kind of the same. It was like suburban, so it was just like sidewalks, dumbass walls, little stupid trees, and then rows of houses. And I was like, oh no, this is not my street. I looked over at the bus, and the bus was like, bye, bitch, and just like left. And I was like, no! So I was trying to run to catch up to the bus. And I was wearing these plastic sandals that my stepmother had bought for me at this like really cheap little, I don't know, outlet store, and my fucking sandals broke on my feet. But this just shows you so much about my consciousness as a first grader. I was like too embarrassed to like take them off, so I just was like sliding my feet on the ground so it looked like I had shoes on, because that's the most important thing. And so I stopped running and I was just like scratching my feet on the sidewalk trying to catch the bus, which of course. Which of course went way too fast for me. And then there was this really creepy truck. It looked like a fucking, like a creepy watercolor painting of like a scary truck that came up. And they were like, do you need a ride? It was like some horrible looking man. And I'm like, this man smells like dried blood. I was like, he's a child murderer. Like in my head, I was like, hell no, I don't need a ride. But I was like, no, thank you. That's very nice.
And he was like, so he kept following me, and I got really scared, but I was also too scared to run because I didn't want to look like I didn't have shoes on. So somehow I found my way home after this creepy, like, fucked up dude was like following me for so long in this creepy truck. I finally made it to my street, got to finally take my broken shoes off, and I was like almost crying, and I told my dad. I'm like, Dad, and then there was this creepy guy that in the truck that was following me, and my dad didn't say anything, and he turned and picked up the phone, which was at the time, because I'm old, was mounted to the wall with a big curly string, you know, from one end to the wall, and he called 911 immediately. And then looked at me and said, what was the license plate number? And I was like, what the fuck? I'm like, I don't know. And he was like, what the hell? And he hung up the phone on 911. And he was like, next time that happens, scratch it into the ground with a rock or something. And I was like, I was little, so I was like, this is going to happen all the time? Like, what? There was, like, other times in my life where I was almost abducted, but I think that that stands out in my mind is, like, because I was so little that, like, it seemed, when I looked at this person, I immediately thought of, like, I'm going to end up on the news as a dead person if I, like, go in this car.
Wow. My God. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, crazy that there were numerous times you were nearly abducted.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't like a... I was like a kid that was like taken care of by multiple different facilities and groups of people. So there were a lot of gaps there in like my supervision.
I guess that's kind of the opposite of my childhood.
So you were never almost abducted?
No.
I guess you probably weren't very cute, were you?
There were 600 people in my town, so...
It's like, what's the point? Like, everyone will know it's Harold or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. There were really no opportunities to be stolen.
Well, I'm sorry for you, because...
But, wow, that's interesting.
Interesting is also a word for unusual.
Yeah, the thing that I think about when you say that, which was usual in my high school experience, just how you said, you know, you said it so casually, like, oh, one of the many times I was almost abducted, was how often girls were raped or molested at parties. When I was growing up.
Wow, William.
Well, I mean, it's just like, it was the same kind of, you know, it's disturbing, but it's also, it was so common that it was just kind of casually like brought up all the time.
No, by, totally.
Like, friends of mine who just like acted like it was completely normal.
Well, in a fucked up way, I think that it is, not normal as acceptable, but normal as common. Right. I think it is, I mean, at least in the world that I knew, and many other women I knew, it was, like, fairly common to be in a really shady scenario. And I think that the commonness of that experience made it so... It was, I think, of one of the reasons why women or girls were, like, okay, like, this is something that happens, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, now I feel like, you know, I think that also, I think that there are certain watermarks of, like, terrible experiences for each individual. So it's like, if they have a worse, more fucked up experience, then, like, something which is also shady, but doesn't really hit that level, is kind of, like, sanctioned as, like, oh, shit happens. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Which, I don't know. I really don't know how... I wish for a better world, and I wish people could find healing for it. I wish that that stuff was never acceptable, but I don't really know what to do about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just remember like the first time a friend in maybe it was junior high, because where I'm from, people start drinking when they're like 13 and like black out. And that was like the fun, cool thing to do.
I do remember you at 14 weren't doing drinking. please tell me again.
Okay. So I was behind the curve as a 14-year-old, and I remember being in my grandma's kitchen, and my dad said to my grandma, "William doesn't drink, and that's pretty cool." And then my grandma said, "That is cool."
Oh my god, I'm trying not to spit wine everywhere. It's so fucking cute. And then like 4 seconds later, you're like, "I need a drink."
Yeah, exactly.
What the fuck?
It was seriously like a scene from a movie. "That is cool." My grandma.
You're like, "Oh, grandma thinks I'm cool. I need to change something."
Exactly.
But no, that's real. That's real. I think that like when I think of things that happened when I was like, I didn't really drink until I was probably a later teen, which also was way behind the curve. I didn't smoke weed until I was like 18. I didn't smoke cigarettes until I was in my early 20s. You know, I didn't do a lot of things as normal kids do, you know, like in middle school or whatever. Yeah, I do remember like getting into some weird scenarios with kids, but I don't know. I think that it's hard to say like the exact parameters of my boundaries and my mind as like how I was as a young woman and like the things that happened to me that were like horribly fucked up and not in my permission zone. And then the things that were just like, what happened, you know, to, okay, I'm being way too vague. I'm going to reel it back. Do you want to hear a terrible story?
You're going to have to get some details. Yeah.
All right. These are the deets. Okay. I guess in the vein of a creepypasta, these are like urban legends that are real, but they're also like amorphous and mercurial where you can't really hold on to them. There's nothing really to report, you know? And it's like one of those things where it's like, is that true? Isn't true? Who knows? So, excuse me. I'm going to take a little sip. When I was 15 years old, my mom and stepdad had a rave agency.
A rave agency?
Wow. I'm calling it a rave agency. So what I'm trying to say is like downtown Woodland, California, they took over this old building. They bought this old building. It was actually my grandfather's office, and they took it over, and they were like a partial owner. And there was these different levels, and the ground level and the basement level used to be a Gold's Gym. So, basically like the ground level was like a big hall. And then underneath in the basement was all these like hollowed out little rooms. And then there was like a back room where it used to be the showers and lockers. And then it was just like a pile of debris, like hollowed out shower shells and lockers and stuff like that, and this big pile of shit. So no one really went in there. It was like garbage. Anyway, my mom and stepdad were ravers, and they loved rave. They loved to rave. And I was a goth-ish. I was kind of like a grunge/goth girl at 15. And anyway, they put on a rave one night, and my other town that I had lived in was Vacaville, Cowtown. And there was this guy that worked at a record store that was right next to my old high school. And I recognized him at the rave. So, oh my God, I can't, like, this story sounds like fine and kind of tedious and boring right now, but I'm like using this as a device to really cut back on my emotional side. Cause I
say it's
fitting in perfectly with the creepypasta that.
The very boring setup.
Yeah, but let's continue.
Okay, I think the boringness is also kind of a medicine because it's kind of an emotional experience. Okay, so anyway, I'm 15 years old, at a fucking rave, don't want to be there, but I live upstairs in this old karate dojo with my fucking family. So I literally lived there, and I was technically supposed to be on security duty, which was a joke because I was not very intimidating at the time, which I've learned to be since. Anyway, I'm downstairs at the front talking to this guy in his late 30s, early 40s, who owns a record shop from my old town. I recognized him, so I started talking to him. I had like a water bottle, and I was drinking from a water bottle. And my mom, who was really mean to me, my mom was so fucking mean to me. She was rolling on ecstasy, so she was like in a great mood. And she was like, oh my God, my daughter. She like came out and gave me a hug. And I was like, whoa, cool, my mom's being nice to me. So I like hugged my mom and I had put my water bottle down. And then she like hugged me for like a weirdly long time, but I was like into it because I was like, my mom loves me. Oh my God. So anyway, she left and then I kept drinking my water and talking to this dude about music or something. I don't even care. But, I started feeling really weird. Like my vision was being weird and I felt weird. I felt kind of tired and I was starting to feel really out of it. So it was like, I don't feel good. I'm going to go inside. I'm going to go like home, which was just upstairs. And he's like, oh yeah, let me help you out. And he like grabbed my arm and stuff. And I was like, ooh, no, fuck no. So I like took my arm back and I just like weaved in and out of this rave. Like instinctively, I was like, gotta lose this guy. And so a rave is like the best place to lose someone because everyone's being insane. Like the lights are flashing, everything. There's like, basically, any tracking device you have to follow another person is lost. You know, so I just, like, bumped out, went downstairs, and I, like, crawled into that pile of, like, lockers and shells of showers. I crawled into the debris on my hands and knees and weaved through. Who the fuck is hitting me up? Okay, sorry. And then I felt really, really weird. So I was just like, I need to be safe. I crawl in there, I find this like hollow of a shower shell inside of the mountain of garbage and I laid in it and I felt really stiff and I just kind of like went numb. And then, oddly, like I was probably there what felt like an eternity, but it could have been like 45 minutes to 2 hours. And then my cousin found me and she was like, are you okay? I feel really weird. Are you feeling weird? And like me and my cousin have like really, we're really synchronized like psychically or whatever. So like she somehow knew exactly where I was and found me. And like, she also went really stiff. And then like, we were lying there until the sun came up and like eventually our family was looking for us. And then we got in trouble for going missing. But, anyway, we thought that we were just being weirdos. Like, we didn't really understand. And then, like, 2 weeks or a month later, I was getting, like, burritos with my stepdad in a different town. And while we were eating, he was, like, talking shit about that guy from the record store. And, like, I guess him and my mom and stepdad, like, all, like, started, like, an amateur porn company or something. I know the story is getting... stay with me. Anyway, so, they were talking about, how he had fucked him over for some money or something. And I was like, I don't... he was getting really intense about it, and I was like, you know what, like, that's your thing, like, I just want to eat my burrito, like, I don't really understand what you're talking about, I don't really feel involved in this. And then he was like, oh, you should. And I was like, why? And then he was like, oh, he tried to rape you. Why am I laughing? He tried to rape you last month or last week, or I don't remember. It was a long time ago. And I was like, wait, what are you talking about? And then he was like, oh, remember that show? Anyway, he was like, he like drugged you and he was going to try to rape you. And then I had it just like sunk in the bottom of my stomach. Like I realized that like both of my parents being my mom and stepdad, knew that I was getting up like set up for a sexual assault, and they literally didn't give a fuck. And he was just using that information as ammo so that I could be like, yeah, fuck that guy. So that was like, to me, this really disturbing thing that happened. And it like, it was one of those like consciousness shifters where I was like, what's real? What's fake? Like, I do remember feeling really creepy. And like, I do remember feeling like I was like given a date rape drug, and that fucked me up. But also I remember like a rumor going around town that like, he like spread a rumor, this like record shop guy, when I was 14 or 15, that like he had like fucked me before or something. But I think that that was just like him bragging as like a fake lie. Mm-hmm. But I think when I think about it, it's like a creepypasta or like the movie Memento or whatever. You're like, what's reality? I don't know. And to me, that is like the creepiest fucking urban legend, like things that you hear about yourself, or like people that are like predators, or people that are like using drugs to alter your consciousness to overpower your body. And then that changes your consciousness.
Yeah. Wow. I can't give like a worthy response to that story. It's very disturbing.
Me neither. I can't give a worthy response to my own story. I mean, that's a huge pile on. And I think that that's, along with many other things, like, in my upbringing that were, like, so fucking demented. I'm like...
When you say it made you feel like the movie Memento, and you're like, what's real? What's happened? Are you trying to say you think something could have happened that you don't remember? Like, because it was too traumatic or because you were drugged?
Well, I think at the time, because of other things that were happening in my life that were, also involving like sexual trauma, I think there was just like that feeling in general. Like when you are assaulted, it does make your reality into a different kind of dimension. I'm gonna just go over here because I have to charge this phone so it doesn't die. Fuck. Hold on, I charged it and then it came out of the wall. Okay, so what I'm saying is, like, as an assault survivor, which in my like we were saying earlier, like what does and doesn't quantify as assault in an individual's experience often has to do with like the highest watermark and how they rate their assault, that is like assault with a big A in all caps, rated next to something that is like somebody on the bus, like maybe or maybe not intentionally grabbing your butt or something like that. Like, I think that what I've noticed in like my own trauma experiences is when people share their trauma experiences, they share what is trauma is like the things that are like the heavy hitters. So depending on like how hard you've been hit, those will be different. It will be on a different register. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It'll register differently. I think that like, because of those assaults that are like the capital A in all caps assaults that I don't even really want to go into right now, like that particular instance to me is like kind of a mysterious, like, I'm not really sure thing where it's like, I don't know. It just kind of goes into a gray area for me. Does that make sense? Because it's not like a five alarm, you know what I mean? Like, that's assault. Like, even though if that happened to probably many, if that happened to most people, that would probably be pretty fucked up, right? And it still has me shook, but like, I don't know. Basically, what I'm trying to say is I think that there's a really strong connection to weird, traumatic, other primal experiences in life that feel sort of otherworldly, even though they're like part of the human range, you know, like life and death and like sexual assault and brutality and violence. But I think that like for me, sometimes when I've been in those experiences is like when I feel like the most sense of like divinity finding me. You know, and I feel like that's like why I have such an interest in otherworldly experiences or like divination. I think that they put you in a really hopeless space. So I think I like am obsessed with finding the thing that is unseeable in the darkness that like really like moves me forward, if that makes sense. It doesn't make sense. I'm not explaining that well.
I'm having trouble understanding that part, but I think I get what you mean about trauma feeling otherworldly. I mean, just because of like the shock or disbelief of it, you know, like a car accident, you're like, whoa, this isn't happening right now, but it is. Totally. You know, like an assault is like, it's so out of the ordinary or so shocking, it's hard to believe it's real. It just feels, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. yeah, no, what I mean is like when I have experienced things that made me feel like the world was just a tight little dark coffin box, like 6 feet under, like when like all light goes away, and everyone involved and everyone in the room is just like this little cold ice cube of a terrain. And like all you could see, all you can sense is like very terrifying, very closed in. You don't have any angels. Like, I think that my experience with that has been extensive. And that's why I have CPTSD, which is a mental disorder where like I have PTSD. Like I have like, I can get triggered and like feel really scared like sometimes. But I also sometimes think in the darkness of my own mind that like having gone through those experiences and having gone to the shadowy realms are really where I found a sense of strength and a sense of insight. You know what I'm saying? Like, to be predictive or to understand how to navigate through darkness and like finding like the silver lining or the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, like that's where I've found confidence to navigate from. Does that make sense? Like come out of the shadows. Like I, because I've been like pushed in them, I'm like, okay, my soul wishes to arise, you know? Okay. This has been a very special episode of Neon Cauldron. Thank you for coming on, William. I think that we're both like stunned by what we've done to ourselves just now.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's interesting. I like was expecting to go there, but it's been.
Yeah, I think we're kind of like going there together little by little, which is weird because I really did intend to on shying away from like darker moments, which I have done. But I mean, it still goes there sometimes. I don't know. I can't be afraid of the darkness, I guess, even though it's really scary.